of enjoyment, then with no more actual disgust than was to be found in burger chains all over the planet. He stood up, took his tray over to the "please dispose of your refuse with care" receptacle, and dumped the whole thing. If you had told him that there were children starving in Africa, he would have been flattered that you'd noticed. There was a tug at his sleeve. "Party name of Sable?" asked a small, bespectacled man in an International Express cap, holding a brown paper parcel. Sable nodded. "Thought it was you. Looked around, thought, tall gent with a beard, nice suit. Can't be that many of them here. Package for you, sir." Sable signed for it. His real name. One word. Six letters. Sounds like examine. "Thank you kindly, sir," said the delivery man. He paused. "Here," he said. "That bloke behind the counter, does he remind you of anyone?"
"No," said Sable.
He gave the man a tip, $5, and opened the package. In it was a small pair of brass scales. Sable smiled. It was a slim smile, and was gone almost instantly.
"About time," he said.
He thrust the scales into his pocket, unheeding of the damage being done to the sleek line of his black suit, and went back to the limo.
"Back to the office?" asked the chauffeur.
"The airport," said Sable. "And call ahead. I want a ticket to England."
"Yes, sir. Return ticket to England."
Sable fingered the scales in his pocket.
"Make that a single," he said. "I'll be making my own way back. Oh, and call the office for me and cancel all appointments."
"How long for, sir?"
"The foreseeable future."
And in the Burger Lord, behind the counter, the stout man with the cowlick slid another half dozen burgers onto the grill. He was the happiest man in the whole world, and he was singing very softly.
"You ain't never caught a rabbit," he hummed himself, "and you ain't no friend of mine."
The them listened with interest. There was a slight drizzle which was barely kept at bay by the old iron sheets and frayed bit of lino that roofed their den in the quarry, and they always looked to Adam to think up things to do when it was raining. They weren't disappointed. Adam's eyes were agleam with the joy of knowledge. It had been 3 a.m. before he'd gone to sleep under a pile of new aquariums. "And then there was this man called Charles Fort," he said. "He could make it rain fish and frogs and stuff."
"Huh," said Pepper. "I bet. Live frogs?"
"Oh, yes," said Adam, warming to his subject. "Hopping around and croaking and everything. People paid him money to go away in the end, and he racked his brains for something that would satisfy his audience. He'd done for Adam a lot of reading in one go. "And he sailed off in the Mary Celeste and founded the Bermuda Triangle. It's in Bermuda," he added helpfully.
"No, he couldn't have done that," said Wensleydale sternly, "because I've read about the Mary Celeste, and there was no one on it. It's famous for having no one on it. They found it floating around all by itself with no one on it."
"I didn't say he was on it when they found it, did I?" said Adam scathingly. "Course he wasn't on it, because of the UFOs landing and taking him off. I thought everyone knew about that."
The them relaxed a bit. They were on firmer ground with UFOs. They weren't entirely certain about New Age UFOs, though. They'd listened politely to Adam on the subject, but somehow modern UFOs lacked punch.
"If I was an alien," said Pepper, voicing the opinion of them all, "I wouldn't go around telling people all about mystic cosmic harmony. I'd say," her voice became hoarse and nasal, like someone hampered by an evil black mass,
"this is a laser blaster, so you do what you're told, rebel swine."
They all nodded. A favourite game in the quarry had been based on a highly successful film series with lasers, robots, and a princess who wore her hair like a pair of stereo headphones, TM. It had been agreed, without a word being said, that if anyone was going to play the part of any stupid princesses, it wasn't going to be Pepper. But the game normally ended in a fight to be the one who was allowed to wear the coal scuttle, TM, and blow up planets. Adam was best at it. When he was the villain, he really sounded as if he could blow up the world. The them were, anyway, temperamentally on the side of planet destroyers, provided they could be allowed to rescue princesses at the same time.
"I expect that's what they used to do," said Adam. "But now it's different. They all have this bright blue light around them and go around doing good. Sort of galactic policemen, going round telling everyone to live in universal harmony and stuff."
There was a moment's silence while they pondered this waste of perfectly good UFOs.
"What I've always wondered," said Brian, "is why they call them UFOs when they know they're flying saucers. I mean, they're identified flying objects then."